The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you've been told that those who embrace the Bible have committed intellectual suicide. No one with half a brain or even an ounce of a brain could possibly believe in Adam and Eve, Noah's Ark, the parting of the Red Sea, Jonah. I mean, give me a break. Or the most central anchor of all God's miracles, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. To believe in such nutty stuff takes blind faith, or so you have been led to think. Well, my friend, sympathetic as I am to your plight, because there was a time when I said all those same things, so I entirely understand, it actually is not a matter of blind faith, but facts and evidence. Now, facts and evidence are not terms that are usually associated with religion, but then we are an unconventional program here to discuss this provocative subject with me. Rotating co-host, good friend Jim Barrier, calling all the way from San Antonio, Texas. And in this last month of Texas, I imagine that right about now they're running out of inner tubes, towels, and blow dryers. Jim, welcome to our program.
Hi, Bob. Well, to tell you the truth, in between Harvey and Irma, I left town. We had already scheduled a trip, and I went to the nation's capital and had a great, great time in Washington, D.C., seeing the monuments and seeing at least the ones they haven't torn down. And
Those monuments are still up? They haven't torn them all down yet?
Oh, yeah. I saw one in Alexandria, and it was a statue, and it was there in honor of the fallen Confederate soldiers from Alexandria. And I thought, well, they haven't found that one yet.
Well, I don't have a lot of emotion about the Confederates, but I knew that next it would be, well, the forefathers owned slaves, and we all look back now, and slavery was a horrific institution, but Jefferson, Washington, yeah, they had slaves. They were also at that changing of the guard time when they were saying, okay, I was brought up this way, but my conscience is starting to bother me. I'm having pangs of guilt, and they wrestled with it, and they were tortured by it. Nancy Pelosi seems to have just discovered this because all of a sudden, out of the blue, even though she's been in Washington more years than anybody can count, she suddenly wants Jefferson's name taken off of, I've heard there's some place where Christians are going to pray, and it's called the Jefferson something or other. And I'm thinking, has she figured out that with that kind of logic, we have to change the name from Washington, D.C. to something else? Because Washington,
exactly.
Or however, there is a perk here, Jim. The perk is that if we're going to do that, there goes the Washington Post.
Yeah, well, that's good.
That would be, if that thing had to get closed down, that wouldn't be so bad.
And thank goodness William Jefferson Clinton is no longer in office, or he'd have a problem. But
there's the college that Thomas Jefferson started in Virginia. Yeah. They want to take his statue down. He started the college. I mean, it's just insane.
Oh, it's nuts. Well,
and people will never stop. And if they're going to take down a statue, how about Margaret Sanger? You want to talk about a racist who didn't live that long ago, that believed in eugenics and believed African Americans were inferior? Yeah. But you're not going to see the day when they take down her statues. There's zero thought.
Well, and I visited the Jefferson Memorial on this trip. My wife was with me. We hadn't been there in several years. And it's one of my favorites. It's a beautiful, beautiful memorial, which, by the way, now some of the folks out there are moving to defund it, and actually, because it's offensive. And
Al Sharpton wanted that at least defunded. He sounded like he'd be happy it was taken down. It was another place of prayer that Nancy Pelosi was talking about. But these are new revelations to them.
And I took a picture of it and put it on Facebook, and I said, so tell me again why after 43 years this is suddenly offensive. And I also took a couple of pictures of some of the quotes inside the Jefferson Memorial of Thomas Jefferson. And one was one that was actually denouncing slavery, so he must have come to terms with that in his own life.
Well, he came to terms with it when he wrote our Declaration of Independence. He tried to abolish it, but the southern states wouldn't let him do it, and they pulled it out.
Yeah. And then I put another one on there that starts off with a line about the Almighty and all of this language about the God of the Bible. And, of course, now, I know he was a deist, or at least that's what they say, but I've heard people say that Jefferson was an atheist and that he and Ben Franklin were unbelievers and all this kind of stuff. They haven't read their history.
That is utter nonsense. They believed in God. They even believed in Jesus. They probably wouldn't pass a litmus test of what you and I would call an evangelical Christian. But the thing people don't understand is these terms have to have some historical continuity. Now, today, a deist is somebody who believes that there is a God, but he's impersonal, and he does not involve himself in the affairs. One of the illustrations they love to use the deist is that it's like God just, he built the watch, and he cranked the watch up, and now he just sits back and watches it, no pun intended.
Well, but the problem with Calvinism.
Well, Calvinism would suggest some involvement, even though neither of us are Calvinists. But the problem is, you look at some of the prayers that Jefferson made, that Franklin made.
Yeah.
They're certainly entreating God to intervene. Now, there were issues with the Trinity and denying, or I would not even say denying, being as uncertain about the Trinity. That was a little closer to what a deist was back then. But that's the problem. People take out Webster's Dictionary, and they try to define a word. And they think it means the same thing today that it did 200 years ago. And segueing into what we're going to talk about for most of the program, we've mentioned this before, the word faith in the New Testament did not mean blindly following something. The word actually meant obedience, and it was obedience to a God who had revealed himself and made himself known. The apostles assumed that Christ would make himself known through his spirit to a person's life and that his resurrection was an historical fact. Faith meant trusting this God who absolutely for a fact exists, trusting him to work in your life. Faith did not mean saying, golly gee, jumpin' Jiminy, I have no idea if there's a God anyway, but I'll just go ahead and pretend that there is one. That is not what faith meant.
No, not at all. And sadly, there are people today that maybe live that way. But what I was going to do tonight, and we'll move into this, I thought I would kind of play devil's advocate or just be the skeptic tonight, and I want to ask you some questions and give you a moment to shine in your apologist armor and answer some of these questions that people ask a lot.
So we're going to pretend that you're the guy that's not is skeptical but hasn't figured it all out, and you're going to let me shine. You've been on our show too much to fool our audience. You're a very bright person, and you know the answers to all these questions. But hey, if you want to play it that way, Jim, that's fine with me.
I would really like to.
Okay.
So okay, now we're not on a break yet. So let's jump in the first
let's jump
one,
right
and
in.
Then
you betcha.
Okay. Why does God let hurricanes and earthquakes kill innocent people?
Well, I could give you the Bob Newhart answer. He'd say, why indeed? Next question.
No, I want more than that.
Well, when we're talking about any kind of suffering, from a hurricane to a tidal wave to the personal level where somebody is ill, the Bible does tell us why we live in an imperfect world and why there is suffering and why there is evil, either the evil from people or something that sometimes seems like the evil of nature, or at least the ferociousness of nature. The Bible does tell us why we have that phenomenon, that invasion in our world in general. It does not tell us why it's proportioned the way it is. So this might be news to Charlie Hebdo magazine. God will not tell us why there was a hurricane in Texas any more than he'll tell us why there was a hurricane in Florida. He could. There have been times in the past, such as the Old Testament days, where he did send a prophet who warned them of some disaster that was about to happen. And I'm not saying that God couldn't even do that today, but I'm saying oftentimes God doesn't say anything and people put words in his mouth. We do know that in general, it was because the original human beings turned away from God and were very curious to know what life would be like without God. They lived in a paradise. So in general, God being the gentleman he is and God seeing our human free will as important as it is, stepped out of the way and says, okay, you want a world without me? I will withdraw myself from your lives. I will withdraw myself from your world and we'll let nature take its course and see how you like it. So we do have a very clear answer to that in general, but I'm not going to be able to tell you, nobody could tell you why a 6-year-old girl gets leukemia and some mobster lives to be 70 years old. I'm not going to tell you why one state gets hit with a hurricane and another state does not. How it's proportioned is what we don't have the answer to.
Now, there were certain celebrities who were suggesting that the hurricanes were punishment for people voting for Donald Trump.
And what's so ludicrous about that is that Texas is a very conservative state, but one of the cities that was hit the worst was Houston, and the demographics of Houston show them as a more liberal city, and those were Hillary Clinton supporters. So if they really want that logic, let them take it.
Yeah, well, and my response to that was, well, if that's the case, then were the two earthquakes that devastated towns in Mexico shortly after that, were those judgments on illegal immigrants?
Exactly. I mean, can you just imagine Donald Trump getting up and saying that's God protecting our border? Can you just imagine the way they'd react on CNN and MSNBC? They'll make a comment about why we had a hurricane in Texas. Folks, sometimes things just happen, and I'm saying this as a Christian. We'll be right back.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I would like to thank those of you who came out to join me yesterday afternoon at Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore, unique name for a bookstore. We had a blast. It was so great seeing so many of you. I felt very supported, very encouraged. And I would also like to thank the entire staff of Mysterious. You know, this Mysterious Galaxy Books, it's like Comic-Con every day over that. It's the best way I can describe this store. I would like to thank them for hosting such a fun event. As we had told you ahead of time on last week's radio show, I and over a dozen other local authors showcased our works. Of my many novels, the one I was invited to present was The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. The event was a big success. Now, even if you were unable to attend, the store requested that we, the authors, leave a few extra signed copies of our novels at the store. And so if you live in the San Diego area, if you missed the event but had wanted to be there, you can still drop by that store, Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore on Balboa. If you missed it, go in, purchase a book. And to listeners who listen to us all over the country following us on the internet, they have a website, and you can order a signed copy online. That's a Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore for a signed copy of The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. But what could be more dangerous to thought and politically correct thought at that than my good friend Jim Barrier?
Well, you know, if passage into the great beyond and eternal life rests on political correctness, I'm in trouble.
Well, political correctness contradicts itself.
It does. It does. It's just whatever's convenient.
It's like the old saying, the snakes are starting to eat each other. I remember when a number of years ago they were doing studies and they were saying, we can predetermine now whether your child might be born a male or a female. And there are people that are choosing to abort them if they're female. Well, how do the feminists defend that? Well, we defend women. Well, does that include baby women? Oh, but we got to stand by a woman's right to choose. And then they were saying I'm not saying I necessarily bought into the science. They could determine perhaps ahead of time a gay gene. Oh my gosh. And so the gay community was going nuts saying this would be genocide if they did that. And then they had to stop and go, but even though it would be genocide, we still stand by a woman's right to choose. I mean, it's just the contradictions are just glaring.
Maybe we can genetically engineer whether people will vote Republican or Democrat.
Oh, the politicians try to engineer that all the time by rezoning districts. Yeah. I hear they're doing that in Texas, speaking of your humble
stuff and ballot boxes and stuff. Well, let us move on. Now, I was in Washington, D.C. a week ago, and we visited so many great places, and we also visited the Museum of Natural History. And so I concluded after that tour that evolution is a proven fact.
Oh, of course.
They just assumed it throughout everything, and they just assumed that. So isn't that true? Isn't evolution a fact?
Well, I can tell you two scientists who, although they accepted the theory of evolution, did not use that to conclude that God did not exist. Now, they're obscure scientists, Jim. Perhaps you and a few people in our audience have heard of them. One was a guy named Charles Darwin, who wrote the book Origins of Species. Charles Darwin not only believed in God, he had gone to divinity school before he went out on the SS Beagle. And at the end of his life, he referred to evolution as unformed ideas that people were making a religion out of them, was reading the book of Hebrews on his bed, on his deathbed, according to an eyewitness. People, of course, try to dispute that, but I've looked into it. From all that I've researched, and I've researched it extensively, the story seems to check out. Now, Albert Einstein would have accepted Darwin, but Einstein had a quote that, and it went something to this effect: anybody who studies this universe with any humility comes to the conclusion that a manifest spirit is at work, one to whom we should all be humble. I was paraphrasing that a little bit because I don't have it in front of me, but that's about pretty much 90% the quote. I meet atheists all the time who'll try to deny that Darwin said that, and then you can show it to them, and they'll say, well, you're taking it out of context, and you can show them the context, and they'll say, well, that's not what he meant. It's pretty unnerving. Now, as for evolution being a fact, it depends on what kind of evolution we're talking about. In science, nothing is proven unless it's observable and repeatable. Microevolution is observable and repeatable. Microevolution is a fact.
But not macro.
Macroevolution we can't observe because it talks about changes that came in species over billions of years and the amount of missing links that we should have. We virtually have none, and the few that they put forth get contested even by evolutionists who believe the theory, want to believe the theory. But here's what happens. Microevolution, what we're meaning, of course, is that within a species, there's something in the DNA that will cause it to adjust and adopt, which, you know, when you look at our DNA, which is like a program, almost like a computer program read out ahead of time what we're going to be like, how do you have information without sentience? We have this information that determines what we're going to be like. So it's not an even if you accept these theories of evolution, it's not an argument against God at all, which is a leap that people take. But yes, we do observe that birds will adopt and adjust into different kinds of birds and reptiles and the cat family, the feline family. We observe that within the species. We do not observe one species morphing into another. And so what will happen is in classrooms, people will get up and they'll say, well, evolution has been proven, and they can give you examples from microevolution all year till the cows come home, and the students are bombarded with a plethora of it. And then they extrapolate from that and conflate it with macroevolution. That is the problem. Now, let me say this, though, Jim.
Okay.
I don't accept macroevolution. It has never been proven. It's only a theory. The honest evolutionists and Darwinists will admit that it's only a theory. And one of those honest ones was Darwin himself. They will admit that. But hypothetically, if they proved that we evolved from apes, if they proved macroevolution, they still haven't disproven God. That's A. And they still haven't disproven the Bible. B, they haven't even disproven Genesis, because Genesis was not written to give us detail about how or what process God used to create the world. Genesis simply says, in the beginning, God, not in the beginning, dusts and chemicals.
Well, there you go. You know, that's always been the issue. And that's when I talk with people about macroevolution, all of that. Now, in touring the Natural History Museum, the last two exhibits that I viewed just kind of left me smiling, chuckling a bit. One was about one of my favorite creatures ever. We're going to come back after a break, aren't we?
We will. Hold that thought, my friend. By the way, Jim, what's wrong with you? Haven't you seen Planet of the Apes in 2001, A Space Odyssey? That was proof of evolution right there on the screen with Dolby Stereo and Technicolor. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, co-hosting with me today, my good friend, Jim Barrier.
Okay. Back to the Smithsonian. The last two things that I saw there, one was is one of my favorite animal species, whatever, is the coelacanth. You're familiar with the walking fish.
Oh, yes.
And which was thought to be extinct for 60 million years and fossilized and such.
Yeah, I can and see then, how somebody would see that as a hybrid of something, yeah.
Yeah, well, because it had little fins on the bottom. They said, this is obviously a transitional form. Those are little feet that the fish walked on the floor and eventually walked up on the shore. And then, lo and behold, they found some off the coast of Madagascar.
They weren't supposed to do that.
Well, and
that fouls up the whole operation here.
National Geographic did a whole cover story on it, and it was so funny for me to read this, and the author went down to explore this thing, and he got a team, they took him down there, and they filmed these fish, and they're fascinating fish. They stand on their head, they do all kinds of crazy things, but the final thing is the article closed, he said, but alas, the fish never walked. Apparently, they're just fins for swimming.
Well, now, it's interesting, though, because if we wanted to move over to the species of amphibian, I could, yeah, on a first glance, see how somebody could look at this tadpole. And I used to do that as a kid. I'd keep a tadpole as a pet, knowing that eventually I was going to see it grow arms and legs, and it becomes a frog. And I could see how somebody might look at that and go, well, that's evolution right in front of our eyes. Well, but the thing is, the DNA in that tadpole when it's born has already determined that it's going to become a frog. And we keep repeating that. And that would be true of every tadpole that, yeah, was developing. That is not the same as the theory that says we, yeah, were once all a single-celled amoeba. And then in time, yeah, we started morphing, and then next thing you know, we're coming out.
And the frogs never become birds.
Well, and they keep changing it. They keep moving, yeah, the goalposts. First, they, yeah, were saying, yeah, we came from apes, and then they changed it to, well, it was ape-like creatures.
Yeah.
So again, but we have to be careful as Christians. If we just quickly say evolution isn't true, I think we're better making that distinction between microevolution and macroevolution. Yeah. And again, though, if you're listening out there, folks, and even if you believe in macroevolution, if that's your hill to die for, it shouldn't be. If you're selling yourself short of finding the kind of relationship that you can have with God through his incarnation, Jesus Christ, and the thing that's tripping you up is Genesis. Genesis simply was not written with that much information. And right, it's not telling us how God brought us here. Hypothetically, he could have used a process like that, but having said that, that process has not been proven anyway. It's only a theory.
Yeah. And then the final exhibit that I saw was about hydrothermal vents at the ocean floor that they have discovered with deep sea diving apparatus. And they were able to take pictures of things they've never seen before, and they found species creatures that they've never seen before. And the last line of that exhibit said, and it has caused us to rethink our theories of the origins of the species. And I thought, well, they can rethink it when they're forced to, as long as they don't invoke the name of God or bring the notion that there was intelligence behind it. But it just cracked me. It's like, oh, okay, well, now we're gonna rethink how it all happened. And apparently what we said isn't really how it is. And it just cracked me up how easy it was just to make a statement like that and say, okay, we're going to move on now and change our theories.
Yeah, that's true. And we've seen people talk about, well, maybe life came from aliens and it would explain this and explain, and how easy it is for some people to believe that, and how difficult it is to believe that this entire universe had to start somewhere and somehow. And we have sentience. We think, we feel. How do you get the personal from the impersonal?
Exactly.
Personality had to have always existed. And so it's almost like an equation. There must be an eternal personality. And then the person will say, well, wait, if we had to come from somewhere, then so did God. That would be a valid observation within the boundaries of time and space. But God exists outside of time and space, according to the Bible. And outside of time and space, there would be no beginning or end. And the kinds of people that are saying that about time and space are quantum physicists. The Bible was a little ahead of its time when it described God being outside of time.
Well, we're always playing catch-up. But now, let's segue to the next good skeptic question.
Okay, I must say, you're kind of playing the devil's advocate with yourself. You're throwing it out there, and you're answering yourself.
This happens every time,
Are you sure
time,
you're not
Bob.
Part of the Trinity yourself there, Jim? Are there two Jim Barriers here arguing with themselves?
Well, I do have a body, soul, and spirit, but that's another show.
No, that's that would be another interesting show. Let's put a peg on that.
Okay, so how can you believe a book that was written so long ago and had been translated by so many people? How can you trust what's in it? How can you believe that that's actually fact or something to base your life on? Why do you believe the Bible of all books?
Well, first of all, the Bible is not a book. The Bible is a library. It is a collection of 66 different books, 66 different books written over a period of some 2,000 years, by about 40 different authors, most of whom never met each other. And yet they said all the same things about God, his personality, his standards, what
you
he
mean
demands.
They don't contradict each other?
They do. Well,
not now. Contradictions?
Yeah, now. And I would say if somebody wanted to say, well, this verse in the Bible contradicts that verse, how can God contradict himself? That's a very fair observation, and people try to do that. But I see those contradictions melt away when we look at the culture. The problem is some of these seemingly contradictory verses, if we understood the way people spoke back in those days, we'd realize that in that culture it was not viewed as a contradiction. But we'll talk more about that when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Jim Barrier, welcome back to our program.
Okay. Well, we're doing show tunes all night tonight, aren't we?
I know you know the oldies rock, but we're a lot of Broadway and movie soundtracks today. We've done The Lord of the Rings. That was from Camelot, mm-hmm. which you just heard. Certainly, we've had The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, things like that.
I love them all.
I love science fiction. I love musicals. They're two very different genres, and I love both of them.
Okay, so we are covering science, fiction, and all the rest.
Science. We're doing science, we're doing fiction, and we're doing science fiction. And we're doing people who think the Bible is science fiction, but they're wrong.
Exactly. So you're saying it's actually 66 books written by some 30...
Yeah, it's not one book. When someone says, why are you letting one book rule your life? That's actually a very fair question, but it's not one book. It's not one book at all. It's many books.
Okay, so then, but isn't it true that these are very old texts and they have been handed down and translated? You know, I always crack up. People say, well, the King James Bible. And I say, well, what did they read before the 1500s? You know, what do they read in France? And but people get stuck on that. Why? How can you trust the Bible if it's been translated so many
times? First
of
all, the King James Bible is irrelevant because that is a translation. I don't mean that it's not a good translation, but I mean that your original question about the fact that the Bible was written long ago, the good question here is, can we trust these manuscripts when obviously in those days, things written on papyri, leaves from the Nile River, etc., a lot of that has not survived except in fragments. And what we have with the Bible is copies of manuscripts. Now, first of all, that's true. We're dealing with copies. Second of all, if somebody wants to say that we can't trust copies historically, they've just thrown out all ancient history or all history before the printing press was invented. And they don't necessarily have any reason to tell you why they would believe any book that was printed with the printing press either. The copies are not as big of a problem as people make it out to be. And what I find is so much inconsistency with scholars. The New Testament, to use that as an example, the New Testament was completed. It was written by the end of the first century. Around 90 AD was the book of Revelation. That's approximately the last book written. Now, the earliest copies that we have of the New Testament text would date to about 200 to 300 years from when it was written for our complete copies. Mm-hmm. And we do have some papyri fragments that go within 30 to 50 years. Now, compare that to Aristotle, the philosopher. I have never heard anybody say that Aristotle didn't live, didn't exist, didn't write. From the time that Aristotle lived and wrote to the earliest copy of an Aristotle manuscript, we have a gap of 1,500 years. Sophocles, the Greek playwright, I was a drama major at San Jose State. I never had a professor get up and tell me that Sophocles didn't exist. 1,500 years from the time Sophocles lived to the first manuscript. I remember I was speaking at a fraternity once at Willamette College in Salem, Oregon, and I was making these comparisons, and one of the students said, yeah, but Aristotle and Sophocles don't put demands on my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, thank you for being so intellectually honest, because the truth is, it is not an academic barrier between God and man. It is a moral barrier. And this person, because he could admit that, was probably a lot closer to God than he thought.
Well, you know, and that's one of the things that I often discuss with people, whether it's the evolution theory or the scriptures. It's really, you don't want to change your life is what the issue is.
Yes, no, I'm not saying that there aren't sincere skeptics. There are sincere skeptics and there are insincere skeptics. And with all the years I've been out on the college campuses across the country as a Christian apologist, I've gotten to know them and they'll ask the same questions. And they're very good questions. I think it's fair, very fair. If you're listening out there and you're hearing me and Jim or anybody say, Jesus Christ wants you to give your life to him, and there's going to be eternal consequences if you don't, you have a right to say, well, then, okay, I don't want to be separated from God for all of eternity for not following him. But on the other hand, I don't want to follow something that isn't true. So help me out here. Why should I believe this stuff is true? And what Christians will say 9 out of 10 times is, brother, just accept it by faith. I'm sorry, that's not a good response. And I don't blame the people that don't want to become Christians as a result of that. So sometimes people are saying, I really would like to follow God. There were, for many years, I didn't believe that a God existed. I wanted to, but I wasn't going to pretend he existed just because I wanted to until I saw factual evidence. And more importantly, or I should say alongside of that in a parallel, well, I had an encounter with the Spirit of God, and that's where the rubber meets the road. We're not being asked to assume God exists. We're being asked to meet God. And that is an experience. We were talking about science. Nothing is proven unless it's experiential or repeatable or observable. We can have a relationship where we have an encounter with God. What the archaeology and the science and the Bible manuscripts, and one thing we haven't talked about, but which is pretty incredible, is the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. What that stuff is, where God's left his imprint, is a trail of breadcrumbs leading us to him, but it's our relationship with God that's important.
And you and I both began as skeptics.
Absolutely.
I was not born a believer. I was not even born into a home of believers. And I know you had to find that path. But the word is, we were honest skeptics, and we asked questions and we sought answers. And I do think the experiential thing is huge. I heard a man one time say that a man with an experience is never at the mercy of a man with an argument.
Oh, that's a very interesting quotation.
I've kind of held on to that, and that can involve a lot of areas of our life. But once something's happened and I know it's real and it's happened to me, you can argue all you want.
It's like
the blind man said, I don't know. I was born blind and now I can see. You know, go ask the guy that healed me.
Exactly. And, you know, like I was mentioning earlier that some people find it easier to believe in aliens than God. Okay, now I'll use myself as an example. I have never had an encounter with an alien. I've met people who claim they have. So I would have to say I could either treat those people the way some of the atheists treat Christians and say, oh, that phony baloney. What do you believe that on? Or I can say I am an agnostic to that. I don't think it's likely that I'm ever going to meet an alien. We might have one person says, I don't think it's likely. We might have another person says, oh, well, I think it is likely, but I'm still not sure. We can have a third person that says, I've never thought about it one way or the other, and I don't care. But supposing an alien landed in one of their backyards that day, took them on a ride in the spaceship, and I saw that on Monty Python's Life of Brian, by the way, and then they dropped them right back off. But,
well,
okay,
I want to know if he's an undocumented alien.
No, it was a dreamer alien, Jim, a dreamer. Okay, we'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Bob Siegel's fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is now available on Kindle, Nook, and in print copy. Check out some of the wonderful customer reviews on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Wow, what an incredible story. Well-written, believable characters. The story takes twists and turns that keep surprising the reader. Although it is written from the perspective of a preteen, it is most appealing to an adult. Takes one back to those feelings and longing for adventure. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Music. In addition to many online bookstores, those of you who live in the San Diego area can also find the Dangerous Christmas Ornament at real, honest-to-goodness, hard-copy bookstores with shelves and cash registers. These stores include Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore on Balboa Avenue, and Skyline has a really cool bookstore and cafe, part of Skyline Church, Campus Road off of 94 and Hamasha. But none of that has anything to do with Jim Barrier, and that's my less than good segue back to Jim Barrier.
Real books with hardcovers.
Go figure.
And pages.
You know, and it's funny because when I see that a book is sold on Kindle, I'm not as excited as when somebody gets a hard copy. So I'm stepping in to the 21st century. But boy, I love going into bookstores. I'm glad Barnes & Noble is still in business. But if they hadn't come out with Nook, I don't think they would be either.
Well, I have bought some electronic books. In fact, one of yours I did. But I still kind of like to feel it in my hand. I like to turn the pages. I'm a dinosaur. So... now, I want to.
Was that going to be a segue into us talking about dinosaurs? Because people bring that up at the Bible.
Another show. But I do want to throw you a curve.
That's a shame because I was going to give you proof that dinosaurs lived at the same time as man, and that was the 10 some seasons we had of the Flintstones with Fred and Dino.
Of course,
The evidence is right there. It was on ABC for years.
yeah. Documented. ABC of all networks. No, here's the curve. We talked about the scriptures and the manuscripts and all that. So what about the Gospel of Mary and the Gospel of Thomas, and the Gospel of Judas and the Gospel of Philip? What about those Gospels?
Well, it is true that the apostles, Mary wasn't an apostle. We're talking the Gospel of Mary is about Mary Magdalene. Not the Virgin Mary. If the early church, when they were deciding which books went into the Bible, thought for a moment that the real Philip and the real Mary had written those books, they would have put them in a heartbeat. But they were not that dumb. There was another religion called Gnosticism with a very different belief, and it mixed itself with Christianity. But Christianity was so popular that if somebody wanted to have a forged document, they'd just scribble the name of the apostle. Now, if they ever find out that the real Philip the apostle really wrote something and it can be authenticated and tested and dated, I wouldn't have a problem saying, well, that he was as authoritative as Paul and Peter. But these Gnostic Gospels are not it. Now Judas, of course, Judas had betrayed Jesus. And look, it's not that Jesus wouldn't have forgiven him if he for betraying him. After all, he forgave Peter for denying him. But we're told that Judas never turned his life back to Christ, and his life ended very tragically, and he committed suicide. And so... even if Judas had written a book, the early church would not have considered it to have apostolic authority because he had forfeited his role as an apostle. Having said that, the Gospel of Judas wasn't written by Judas either. So these are a bunch of Gnostic texts, and they have no credibility amongst any serious scholar who understands the New Testament. The test for deciding which books went into the New Testament was it had to be written by somebody who had actually encountered Jesus. They were known as the apostles, or somebody close to an apostle. The apostle Paul wasn't one of the original 12, but he did encounter the resurrected Christ later.
Yes,
Luke was an actual historian. The book of Luke and the book of Acts are actual history books written by a historian who was sponsored by a Roman patron. And he was sent out to the area of Israel to interview many people, but it's also true. So it's valid history, but it's also true that Luke was a close associate of Paul. So on the authority of Paul's apostleship, Mark, the Gospel of Mark was not one of the original disciples. The Gospel of Mark is really the Gospel of Peter. Peter dictated it to Mark. Peter was not very literate. I mean, he could write, but not very well. For example, 1 Peter was written... again, by somebody, if not Mark, another scribe, they would call him an amanuensis, because 1 Peter is written in pretty eloquent Greek. And 2 Peter, on the other hand, was written in terrible Greek. So what scholars believe is that Peter dictated 1 Peter, and he wrote 2 Peter himself. But these were the kinds of questions that the early church was asking themselves when they decided which of these books to accept. And the reason they asked themselves those questions a couple hundred years later is they didn't have time to hold church-wide ecumenical councils across the Roman Empire. They were too busy hiding in the catacombs and avoiding being fed to the lions. It was only after Constantine finally legalized Christianity that they could breathe. And so then they went back and said, okay, for many years now, and that doesn't mean that the New Testament wasn't written till 300 AD. Like I said, it was written in the first century, but these books had been circulating for years. But as far as them getting collected, put in one volume, and people deciding, okay, this one was actually written by an apostle, and so we're going to put that one in. This one, it doesn't seem like it was written by an apostle. We're not going to put that in. Those were the kinds of questions they asked. They were very scholastic, studious questions. They did not just get out a dartboard and throw the dart and go, oh, the Didache doesn't make it. Neither does First Clement. Oh, look, Peter got it. It's not the way it happened.
Final question. How do you know that Jesus Christ even existed? If the texts that we have were people who were followers of him, they would naturally, talk about him. But outside of the Gospels, how do we know that there's even a historical figure? Isn't he just a myth?
Okay.
Isn't he just someone they came up with?
Well, when we're talking about how do we know, there's a difference between evidence and proof. Proof we must experience for ourselves to be convinced. But since that's convincing me, and you, I can't convince you of what I have experienced, then I would show you evidence. I have had an encounter with Jesus Christ, so Jesus Christ has proven himself to me. I don't expect anybody to automatically buy that. So what I'll show them is evidence that Jesus existed. There were people, there were historians of the day who were not Christians who corroborated that Jesus existed. The Roman historian Tacitus, the Jewish historian Josephus not only corroborated that Jesus existed, but that he did miracles and that he rose from the dead. Josephus had been given some kind of compelling testimony that Jesus had risen from the dead. And back in those days, Josephus wasn't a Christian, but he was a Jew, and Jews believed that people could resurrect from the dead. So Josephus wouldn't have necessarily automatically become a Christian, but he did believe that Jesus was somebody that was sent from God, that he did miracles. He records that he was executed under Pontius Pilate. The Talmud, which comes to us from the Jewish scribes, says some very derogatory things about Jesus, says he was executed on the charge of heresy and sorcery. Now, the heresy is understandable because the guy was claiming to be God. Mm-hmm. And if a Jew's going to claim to be God, that's heresy, unless he happens to be telling the truth. But they didn't believe he was telling the truth. But what is interesting is sorcery, because in those days, if you didn't like somebody and you wanted to say something negative about him and you didn't want to follow him, but you could not deny the overwhelming testimony that he did miracles, what did you say? You said, well, yes, he did the supernatural, but it didn't come from God. It came from God's enemy, Satan. So we have a fantastic anti-Christian source with a bias predisposed against Jesus, which nevertheless confirms that Jesus existed and did miracles. Isn't that interesting? I would call that pretty good evidence.
You won again, Bob. You've convinced me.
Jim, you were such a hard one to convince. You probably became a Christian, were convinced years before I was, but you're my good friend.
During the station break, actually.
We're in a show break. The show's over. Jim, the time always goes by much too fast. I'm looking forward to having you on again really soon. Bye bye.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.